Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and lucky us, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, The Laundromat, El Camino, and Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. Which one did you like the best, she asked.
Well, she will find out. All the world will find out really, really soon. Actually, I like the first and the third ones quite a lot. I would say there may be the first one, probably The Laundromat, is probably the one I like the best. The middle one, not so much. But therein lies a tale, which I will get to in a moment. So, let's begin with The Laundromat by Steven Soderbergh. Steven Soderbergh is a really, really talented filmmaker, and he's made some good movies, and he's made some movies I don't like so much. This film, I think, is actually his best in years. I just really, really like it, The Laundromat, even though the subject matter of it is it's not the most pleasant subject matter in the world, but Soderbergh makes a very sort of a bittersweet romp out of it in a lot of ways. In fact, a lot of ways. This is a comedy, really, even though it's about real life stuff, and the real life stuff is not all that funny if you think about it in a serious way. So anyway, this is an unlikely film. It's sort of a movie based on the Panama Papers, which is not exactly accurate, but it's a film based on this real life case of this firm called Mossack Fonseca, which turned out to be just an enormously crooked outfit. They always claimed that they were not, and again, this is real life stuff. They always claimed they were not breaking the law. At one point, they say, you know, we wrote contracts, we don't write laws. But they were a big business outfit, and they were engaged in all kinds of shady, shady, shady business up and down the line. And what this movie does is, It shows how the operations of one of these huge international companies that in this case turns out to be totally crooked, how it has repercussions on the lives of ordinary people. You don't have to be a person with $1 jillion who is investing money all around the globe and engaged in high stakes financial wheeling and dealing to be sort of decimated when one of these outfits turns out to be totally crooked. And that is really what happened here, because this outfit was really totally crooked. So we are dealing here in a very different line from Soderbergh, one of probably his best known movies, which are his three Oceans movies, Oceans 11, Oceans 12, Oceans 13. We are dealing here with very real life stuff, and which is, although it's very often treated as kind of comedy, is very real and is in a way very painful. So the movie starts out with Meryl Streep and James Cromwell, two very fine actors, and they are going off on a celebration in their later years, and they go off onto a boat near Niagara Falls, and everything is just sort of lovely, and you might kind of wonder, where is this movie going? And then a disaster falls the boat. So this all happens in the very beginning of the movie, so this is not really a spoiler. And what happens is that one of them is killed, and the other one goes about collecting insurance money and finds out the insurance company isn't going to pay. The insurance company is actually covered by another insurance company. So, okay, then you go to the second insurance company. And that insurance company isn't going to pay because that one is all wrapped up in a third insurance company. And so you go to that insurance company, and that was et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out that this character is caught in a reminded me a little bit of when you get into one of these voicemail pits of misery where you can't get out of it, except this is not voicemail. And this character is traipsing around to all these different places and trying to get a hold of the money that rightfully should be coming and can't do it. And then it turns out that the Meryl Streep James Cromwell story, which is really the Meryl Streep story at the beginning of the film, is not going to be the main focus of the movie, because then we go to another character who is caught up in a very different way with this Mossack Fonseca firm. And then after a while, that character gets sort of overtaken by another, et cetera. So the movie becomes rather like another film we talked about very recently, a very, very fine film, French film, By the Grace of God, which is about people seeking justice decades after some child abuse by Roman Catholic clergy. That's a sort of a relay race movie where we have one main character and then a second main character and then a third main character. That's really the way that The Laundromat operates, except that it's not just three main characters. There's a whole lot of people emerge at different points during the film who take over the main part of the story. And the earlier characters, for the most part, don't go away. They will also recur later on. And so we have a fairly intricate but always 100% clear exposition of some of the real-life stories that took place that involved this firm. And sometimes the stories are about the bad guys, and sometimes the stories are about the innocent victims. And I found the movie just incredibly lively and fast-moving. The main bad guy characters are played by Gary Oldman and Antonio Banderas, both of whom are excellent. And I found the movie just extra interesting because, again, it's all based on real-life stuff, but it's just enormously entertaining along the way. So it's one of these films that gives you a good time in the movies while you are finding out some more about this real-life case, which had so many reverberations on so many really innocent people. By the way, The Laundromat is playing in some movie theaters. It is also totally available on Netflix, and there's been a lot of controversy about that in movie circles in recent times, because nowadays, movies sometimes, are they really theatrical films if they also open right away on streaming services like, for example, Netflix? To me, I'm now regarding this as one great sort of a fluid situation. And if a movie opens in theaters as well as Netflix or someplace like that, to my way of thinking, it is a theatrical film. Let's just go with that. And if you can also see it on one of the streaming platforms, that's very nice. That's very convenient. They're both pretty much the same things. I suggest everybody go out and get themselves a nice big TV if they possibly can, and you won't even notice the difference between theatrical releases, which are digital nowadays anyway, and what's going on your living room screen. Our next movie that I want to talk about, El Camino, is also very much a theatrical film, but even more a film which is available again, streaming, in this case again, on Netflix. And when you see the movie El Camino, the title comes out at the end of the film, and it is simply El Camino, but it's being advertised as El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. And that's exactly what it is, because this movie is a kind of a sequel to the TV series Breaking Bad. Now, I saw the whole series Breaking Bad. I thought it was pretty good, had its ups and downs, sagged a bit in the middle, then came back again and was really good near the end. Like any good TV series, it had that's going to work, that's going to really catch hold. It had a whole lot of really good secondary characters who in a lot of cases were more interesting than the main characters. The sequel shares some of that virtue, but not all of it. So for those who are not familiar with the series Breaking Bad, and what I'm about to say goes completely for the sequel movie, El Camino, as well. It's a movie about a high school biology teacher named Walter White who finds out that he is mortally ill and is going to die very soon and is very worried about what's going to happen with his family. And so he breaks bad. He is actually, did I say biology teacher? I guess he's a chemistry teacher. In any case, he becomes a meth dealer, a meth manufacturer and meth dealer. He ordinarily was a very nice man, but now he becomes a total criminal because he's got to get the money to support his family after he's gone. And he recruits one of his former students, a guy named Jesse Pinkman, to be his sort of his second in command. And so that's what the series was all about, was this teacher who becomes a meth dealer and manufacturer with the help of this henchman named Jesse. And, as this is a bit of a spoiler, as the series ends, of course, the teacher has to die. He's been doing bad things throughout the movie. But his henchman, Jesse Pinkman, who also was doing bad things throughout the movie, gets to survive, and he is the main character. We only see a tiny little little bit of Walter White in this sequel movie. We see a whole lot of Jesse Pinkman. He's the main character. And he has interactions with all sorts of other figures, some of whom are familiar from the series and some of whom are new. So here's the thing. As I said, I liked the series. I watched the whole thing, thought it was pretty good. Again, it's ups and downs, but by and large, the quality was pretty good, and I found it pretty suspenseful and all of that. I did not like the sequel movie El Camino at all. I just think it's very, very weak. All kinds of times, the logistics, the timing of things just didn't make sense to me. I didn't feel that it was carefully done. It seemed like sort of a rush job, like more of a TV movie than a real movie in a lot of ways. Now, yes, it has some good secondary characters. People like Matt Jones and Charles Baker are back. Jesse Plemons is really good. Robert Forster is excellent. So, yeah, a lot of good secondary characters. But mainly, I found it a very, very disappointing sequel to a pretty good show. Aaron Paul, who plays the main character of Jesse Pinkman, is really good. He has this character in his bones now, and I did enjoy watching him. But overall, I would say if you're a fan of Breaking Bad, or if you've never experienced Breaking Bad, go back to the series, watch that. I think it's gonna take a lot more time because it went on for several seasons. But I think you'll have a better time. Now, I will add one little sequel to my own little tale here. El Camino has gotten a jillion viewers on Netflix, and it has gotten ecstatic reviews from almost everybody. I think those almost everybody's are wrong. I really did not have a very good time watching the movie. But hey, if you're a fan of the series, you'll probably have at least a good time with this movie, El Camino. I didn't particularly. And our final film today, which is a change of pace. This is a real theatrical movie, Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. And it's not going to be playing at every multiplex, but it's out there and it's playing around. And I just thought it was really entertaining and really good. And it is a documentary. It is by Janice Engel, and it is about Molly Ivins, the sort of semi-legendary newspaper columnist and also a media figure. She was on TV a lot, radio a lot. The movie includes an enormous number of clips of her speaking on C-SPAN in various contexts, and she was terrific. Now, Molly Ivins was a total to her core, so that's something for people to know going into this, and she was, a reporter in large part, but she was very much also an opinion columnist, and she vented her liberal views in a whole lot of different ways. And, you know, in some ways she didn't hew to the strict liberal line, but she was very much that. She was what would be called nowadays a progressive. She died several years ago, but this movie is sort of quite posthumous. But it's a real tribute to her, and it's not just that I share her politics, which I largely do. She was just an enormously entertaining figure, and she could, in fact, and saw it as her mission of She was a hellraiser, and she could really do that very, very effectively. She started out in Texas, which is where she was originally from, went to Smith College, got involved in journalism, which was kind of a lifelong ambition of hers, and worked in a whole lot of different places. For a while, she was at the New York Times, but she was just too outspoken for them. It's funny, one of the things she did was she covered the funeral of Elvis Presley, and when she referred to the plump corpse. This upset a lot of Elvis Presley worshippers, and that's the sort of thing that got her out of the New York Times after not too terribly long a tenure there. She ended up back in Texas, where by that time her reputation was so vaunted that she was able to pretty much do what she wanted and lived out the rest of her life, writing pretty much what she wanted to write. She had a lot of access to the rich and famous, and used that access to, again, refer to the title of the movie, To Raise Hell. Now, this movie is not entirely a hagiography, which is to say it's not entirely the story of a saint. It gets into Molly Ivins' dark sides, especially her alcoholism. She really, really was a very, very hard drinker, and this apparently served her well in a lot of ways during her career, because she spent a lot of time hanging out with important people, and she could drink most of them under the table, and that made her both a part of their social circle and also enabled her to kind of get everybody to really loosen loosen up and say the kinds of things that would serve her well in her columns. But eventually, that's one of the things that killed her. She died of cancer, but her health was obviously weakened by a whole lot of years of drinking. And that's a very unfortunate thing. And the movie is pretty candid about that. But that's not what the movie focuses on. It focuses on her tremendous importance as a journalist, as a really outspoken journalist, and as somebody who was giving opinion journalism in a really influential way, even before the advent of Fox News, which of course did and does that on the opposite end of the ideological spectrum. And I can't even quote a lot of the things Molly Ivins says in the course of the movie because they are not family friendly, but they are profanity laced and obscenity laced and sometimes absolutely hilarious. I had a terrific time watching Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins, and I recommend it to everybody. If you're a liberal, you will appreciate her political views. If you are not, you will have the great fun of getting totally mad at her. And I just found the movie a real joy from start to finish, mainly because it is simply hilarious. And that is my somewhat televisual story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Laundromat, El Camino, and Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins.